On this episode of The Big Number, we celebrate Thanksgiving by sharing the teams and players who have the most to be grateful for so far in this NBA season. That's coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to a Thanksgiving edition of The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and that is our man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Tom, not a whole lot over here. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours and to all of our listeners and viewers out there. I hope that everybody's going to get some time to relax, spend with some family, shove a whole bunch of food in your face, and watch some sports when you're in the downtime of that.
Yeah, NBA Cup, we're here. Lots of action this week in NBA Cup. We have lots to be thankful for in the NBA, and that's what we're going to do in this week's NBA, or in this week's Big Number. We're going to give thanks, and we're going to speak up for all the fan bases out there who should feel extra fortunate, extra gratitude for something happening to them. So this week's Big Number is about that, okay? So Dan, we're going to get into it here. This week's big number is minus 80. That's the Los Angeles Lakers point differential when Luka Doncic is not on the floor over the last two seasons since that trade. Dan, that's minus 80 without Luka on the floor. That's where they would be if they didn't have Luka Doncic, considering that he has been unreal to start this season. 13 games played, and he scored an average of 35.2 points per game, leading the league and also leading every Laker since Elgin Baylor over their first 13 games at this point in the season. So here we have it. Elgin Baylor in 1961 averaged 35.5 points per game over the first 13 games of his season. And in 1962, similar. And here's Luka Doncic, 64 years later, averaging 35 a game, something that not Shaq did, not Kobe, not LeBron, not Kareem. It's Luka. And he fell out of the sky, Dan, and just landed in the Lakers' lap. I kind of feel like Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad. They can't keep getting away with this while he's clutching the wheel and flying out the back, driving through the fence. Just livid that Walter White somehow endures. And this is how I think most fans in the NBA feel about the Lakers. It's just like, how is it possible the Lakers were able to get Luka Doncic, a guy who was leading the Mavericks to the NBA Finals at age 25, and then lands in their lap for Anthony Davis, Max Christie, and one first-round pick. We keep doing this, Dan, but after, you know, Tuesday night's win over the Clippers, in which he scored 24 points in the first quarter, another 40-burger, has it hit you yet, Dan? Has it hit you that he's a Laker and that this is really happening? Lakers fans have to be, like, first, second, and third thing they're most thankful for this Thanksgiving is Luka Doncic in their uniform.
Yeah, the gratitude journal is overflowing, right? Every page is just filled with Luka, 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 Luka.
Yes.
I think if it hasn't set in yet, you know, watch them play for a little while and you'll see. It's not only that Luka Doncic is a Laker, it's that the Lakers are Luka's. Like, this is his team. They go as he goes, and he's going, you know, bananas right now. The major reason why the Lakers are off to such a hot start to this season. It's never gonna be okay. It's never gonna make sense. It's never gonna finally, you know, we're never gonna get the pull, you know, the reveal, you know, the, oh, now they tell us many years down the line story. Like, this is going to be inexplicable, implausible, impossible, yeah. Except that it's in front of us now. And yeah, where we are with Luka, like, this was always what you'd hoped you would see from him someday. When everything gets put together, when the motivation meets the gifts, when the conditioning meets the talent, all those sorts of things, you're seeing it now. The cosmic kick in the back of the head that he needed to get to where he needed to go in terms of his offseason conditioning, all that stuff, it comes in the form of the, you know, abandonment of the Mavericks, the betrayal of the trade, all those sorts of things coalescing into the motivation to be what we have seen so far, which is like one of the, I mean, he was already, when right, one of the two or three best players in the NBA. We are seeing him operate on a level that he has not himself reached before, even, you know, in that context. So yeah, if you're a Lakers fan, you got plenty to be thankful for starting with that guy. And if you are a Mavericks fan, I can't imagine you're still watching. So I don't blame you. I wouldn't blame you for having turned it off already, because you've probably heard enough of this and you're finding some other things to do on Thanksgiving. Perhaps you're going from the food, the making a plate to go and reaching up to the top shelf. Maybe that's where your Thanksgiving is going to wind up.
Yeah. I remember one time I took a flight to Australia and I went to sleep and the Josie and the Pussycats movie was on. And I was like, I am not watching this right now. And I fell asleep overnight. Like 6 hours later, I wake up and the movie's back on. And I'm like, what is happening? Please turn it off. That's what the Mavs fans must feel like right now, because even if they want some family time here, they're having some turkey. They're pouring their stuffing or their gravy over the stuffing and making sure that they got some cranberry sauce, and they go to their food coma. All right, I'm done hearing about Luka. And then they wake up the next day. And it's Mavs Lakers on Prime national TV for the NBA NBA Cup game. And they're on national TV, Mavs at Lakers. Like they can't get away from it. And we're not going to get away from it because it's that big of a trade. And so think about what the Lakers would be without that trade. Because LeBron has played in, what, 3 games this season? Anthony Davis has played in 5 games this season. So that means that they have missed, what's that, like 30? All right, so they've played a possible 36 games. They've only played 8 of them. So LeBron and Anthony Davis have missed 28 out of the possible 36 games that their teams have played this year. So the future was bleak in Lakerland. You got a 40-year-old LeBron James, and Austin Reeves was a revelation, an undrafted guy that they picked up off the scrap heap, and he's a real player, maybe an all-star. But that's the future. And so now you got a future of these three guys, 43 points, 13 assists, 9 rebounds with 5 threes in the first quarter from Luka. And it just is all working right now. So you don't have to panic about what's the post LeBron future going to look like with the Lakers, because you've got skinny Luka here. And it's just, I mean, who do you think, like, is the patient zero of thankness? That's not the right word. Gratitude. Is it Nike for like bringing Kobe and his agent Rob Pelinka together with Nico Harrison way back in the day when Nico was repping a lot of Nike athletes and clients, that they should be thanking Nike for making this trade happen, thanking Nico Harrison for this trade? Like, who, when they're sitting at the table at the Thanksgiving table and giving thanks, Who do they direct it to? Is it just the basketball gods? I don't know where the source of it is, but maybe it's just all Nico Harrison.
I mean, the only other person I could think of is whoever is the general manager of that coffee shop in Dallas where it all went down. I mean, it's the only other thing that I could think of, you know, being open that day to create the space for that conversation to happen that led to the trade that continues to boggle our minds. And yeah, I mean, your point is well taken. Like, it's not just a team that had run its course. It's now a team that has a runway where you have Luka with the extension under contract for the next couple of seasons. Reeves, obviously, that's going to be a big sort of decision point and swing point when he comes up at an unrestricted free agency after the season. But I think all indications are at this point, if he continues performing like he has at the beginning of the season here, you don't even think twice about extending him if you're the Lakers. And then, you know, all of those other sort of around the marginal moves around the side. DeAndre Ayton had that knee contusion, which cost him a game there, but he's worked out. He's been what they had wanted him to be. You know, Marcus Smart contributing, Gabe Vincent, who had disappointed in his first run as a Laker, like now getting a little bit more of what you were hoping for from him, that like the complementary pieces around these main guys are all looking kind of like what you had hoped it would look like. And Luka being that rising tide that lifts all boats, Reeves taking another step in his development. And then in those first couple of games, those first 3 games, LeBron, you know, showing an ability to continue to impact the game when he's got the ball in his hands, but also an increasing willingness to do it without the ball in his hands. It's kind of it's about as good as you could have asked for so far. And, you know, there's caveats up and down about, yeah, they're running a little bit hot. They're, you know, their record in clutch games is buoying like a middling point differential. You know, they're more closer to average on defense. They're not an elite offense, all that kind of stuff. And those things are true. And they'll, maybe water will find its level. But we're still talking about a team that looks like it's going to put itself in position to be in that top four race in the Western Conference. And like, who you thank for this, whoever you thank for this, the fact that you are in this position is like you have an entire new lease on life that, you know, 10 months ago, 12 months ago, it just didn't look like that was what we were going to see. It looked like we were seeing the end of something. And now it feels very much more like we are at the start of something new, or the continuation of, as you mentioned, a legacy that goes back, you know, through Elgin Baylor all the way to like George Mike. Like the idea of there will always be the Lakers in this position. Their down periods are very, very limited, and their lengthy runs across the top have stretched across decades. Feels a little bit closer like to the start of one of those than to the end of what had just been before.
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, Austin Reeves, like that would have been something that they were anchoring their team around going forward. And that's like a solid, you know, cornerstone of your franchise, right? Is I got Austin Reeves, and hopefully can extend him and keep him in Lakerland for long term. But the numbers are the numbers. With Luka on the floor, the Lakers over the last two seasons are plus 245, and then they're minus 80 without Luka on the floor. And that's basically per 48. That's the Charlotte Hornets. That's minus 3.7 every 48 minutes once you do the math. And that's the point differential, essentially, of the Charlotte Hornets. So I'm not saying that they would be a basement dweller without Luka Doncic in that trade. Like, Austin Reeves is good. They got other pieces around him, and who knows what they might get if Anthony Davis was moved to another team. But the point is that now they have not just a real bright future this season, but it's bright for the next 10 years. And as good as Austin Reeves looks, I don't think it's nearly as incandescent as it is with Luka Doncic on your team. So I just think, yeah, after they blew out the Clippers there in the second half, it's just there's no question who to me is the should be the most fortunate, expressing gratitude, thanking their lucky stars than the Lakers fan base. And if it feels kind of like a backhanded compliment, yeah, you know what? It is. Okay. It is.
Well, yeah. I mean, what listen, the Lakers, you don't.
They had LeBron and Kareem and Magic and all this in their history. And then, oh, here comes Luka Doncic. That is so crazy.
Yes. You don't get to be given the gift and then complain for like not being appropriately appreciated for the way in which you received it, right? Yeah, like you got the gift, you got the thing. That's the most
Pelinka
important
earned
part
it by
of
making
it.
The coffee date and, you know, negotiating a hard line in the number of draft picks. But man, it's just yeah.
The only thing I have to add to this is that if you are a Dallas Mavericks fan and you're looking for something to be thankful about, the best I can do are a couple things. One, you did get Cooper Flagg in the lottery. Pretty good. He's looking like he's going to be a real stud. Two, the defense is really good. I think they're fifth in defensive efficiency right now. Defense doesn't win championships when you're this bad a team, but hey, the defense is good. And then three, you are closer to being all right than you maybe think. 15 of the Mavericks games so far have been clutch games. So, you know, they're within two possessions in the final 5 minutes. That's good. You know, more often than not, you're close at the end of a game. The downside is that you're 4-11 in those games. And that's not good because you can't score. You're scoring less than a point per possession in those clutch games. But you're there. Like, there's something to build off of. And, you know, failing that, I don't know, maybe the Cowboys pull a rabbit out of their hat against the Chiefs on Thanksgiving. And you got something, maybe that's something to be excited about. And then you don't have to worry quite so much about what you see on Friday night, because I feel like there's a good chance you're not going to be thrilled about it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a great start for Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves. The defense, like you mentioned earlier, with those three guys on the floor, I think it's got a defensive rating of like 130, which is not sustainable.
Yeah,
you can't
ugly.
Have that defense. And we saw in the postseason last year is just like they need a lot more defense out of the rest of the guys in the supporting cast if they're going to have three offensive juggernauts like those two on the floor and still be able to compete at the highest levels. But that's for another day. Congratulations to Lakers fans. You have Luka Doncic in a Lakers uniform and he's dropping 40 burgers every night. Awesome start for them. And on the other side, the Mavs, thankful for ping pong balls. I don't know, just the randomness, thankful for that, because otherwise I don't know what they would be doing in Dallas, dude, without Cooper Flagg. So yeah. All right. Well, we got lots more to give thanks here, Dan, on this very special Thanksgiving edition of The Big Number. We're going to hit three little numbers of yours coming up after the break here. Stay tuned. Happy Turkey Day, everyone. Happy Turkey Week. Gobble, gobble. Let's gobble up some big numbers here. Dan, what's your first big number? Or a little number, I should say. What's your first little number, Dan?
Well, this is it's a week of gratitude. That is the theme of the show. So we're going to go, these are going to ping pong around, but gratitude is at the heart of all of these. Our first little number this week is 10.3. That is how many assists per 100 possessions Lonzo Ball is dishing out this season for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Another way we could have gone with this little number is 1,009. That's how many days it was between when Lonzo first suffered his knee injury as a member of the Chicago Bulls and when he got back on the court last year. He missed more than two full seasons of time going through the ins and outs of what is going on with my knee. Do I need this surgery? Do I need that surgery? Eventually, it winds up being like a cartilage replacement to get him healthy again. And even then, he gets back on the court for the Bulls and then suffers a wrist injury, sprains his wrist, winds up, you know, sort of scuttling last season. He gets on the floor with Cleveland this year. They make the trade to bring him in exchange for Isaac Okoro. And it's like kind of a lottery ticket, right? Like at this point, you don't know what you're going to get. And Lonzo Ball is out on the floor. He's averaging 24 minutes a game. The numbers don't pop off the page, a little over 6 points, five assists, and four rebounds per game. But like he's out there looking more or less like Lonzo Ball, right? Like hit ahead passes, sort of audacious, you know, things that few other people see, getting his hands in the passing lanes on defense. When he gets on the floor, the Cavs, their assist rate pops up, their 3-point rate shoots up, their pace, which is already fast, goes up, and the defensive efficiency goes down. Like they're allowing fewer points per 100 possessions with Lonzo on the floor. And like, he hasn't been, you know, a replacement for Ty Jerome, who was so important for the Cavs last year. He hasn't been an elite backup point guard. The offense is honestly a pretty tough watch. He can't get to the rim anymore. He doesn't finish when he's in there. He's like 90% of his shots have come from 3-point range, and he's only making about 28 or 29% of them. But that's like stumbling over the specifics of what a player is doing on the floor. I think we need to zoom out a little bit and go like, this guy who was such a highly touted prospect, someone who was like in the public consciousness from when he was a teen, you know, like 15, 16 years old at Chino Hills. He goes down for 2 years in his mid-20s, in his prime, at what's supposed to be this like great opportunity for him to grow and develop. And it looked like he might never get back on the floor. And I'm just kind of like, I'm grateful that I'm like, oh, right, Lonzo's playing. Like that it's gotten to a place where not only is he back, he's just in the flow. That's pretty great. Like we've seen a lot of guys get submarined by knee issues or lower leg issues and not be able to make it all the way back. Whether Lonzo is ever going to, you know, be a star, I don't know. But like that he's back at all doing what he loves, I think that's pretty awesome and something that I'm low-key thankful for this year.
Well said, man. Like, thank you for bringing up Lonzo, because I think a lot of fans probably didn't even know that he was in the NBA at this point. Like they just kind of forgot about him because 1,000 days away from playing basketball in the NBA is absurd. That's absurd. And it's a great story. And he's, you know, Darius Garland's been out for a bunch this season. And so they've needed every bit of Lonzo Ball. And you mentioned Ty Jerome. So shouts to Lonzo Ball, one of the great comeback stories in the NBA. And hopefully, you know, a lot of the stuff continues to return for him, including the scoring, because the passing has always been there. I loved Lonzo Ball's vision, his playmaking, the kick ahead passes. It's all there from a playmaking standpoint, and it'll be great to see him continue to improve on that scoring, which I know he can do. So you're going there. I'm going to go with Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat. Okay, that's where I'm going with my first little number or piece of gratitude after this, the opening there. Eric Spoelstra, what a roller coaster couple months for this guy, right? So he gets named Team USA coach. Great. That's an incredible achievement. And then his house burns down while he's out on a road trip, comes home and his house is in flames. He goes out the next day and coaches an NBA game and doesn't miss a beat. And the team is awesome this year. The Miami Heat right now are like, look at the standings here on November 26th. The Miami Heat are third in the Eastern Conference with Tyler Hero missing 2 months due to a foot surgery. And he's having to deal with integrating into a brand new offense where Eric Spoelstra, Team USA head coach, great. House burning down, not great. Not having Tyler Hero for 2 months and still being out there reinventing who he is as a head coach. Like, the offense has done a complete overhaul and they're a number 12 in offensive efficiency because they no longer use pick and roll actions. They have 5 pick and rolls per game and they've completely redone like extreme radical offense all the while. Dan, I think, you know, Greg Popovich always said that his greatest skill as a head coach is, you know, adjusting and adapting to the times. And look at this from our guy, Lev Akabas, with the graphic here to show the 5 pick and rolls that the Heat use, which is an extreme version of the extreme version last year with the Memphis Grizzlies. And Noah LaRoche coming from that bench to the coaching staff as a consultant for Eric Spoelstra. It's absurd what is going on with the Miami Heat. What a great story. Tyler Hero coming back, first game back. Just a casual 20-plus scoring in his first game back in the new offense. Coop Moorhead, my guy over at Heat.com, who runs the content over there for the Miami Heat, pointed this out that last year, Tyler Hero, in his All-Star season, had 35 pick-and-roll actions every 100 possessions. And in his debut, he had 2.
Which so, I think was... That was one of the things people were worried about, right? Is like Tyler Hero had been not only like such a pick and roll heavy player, but really good at it. Like this is kind of where his bread's been buttered as an NBA player. He reached all-star status being a pick and roll, a ball dominant pick and roll heavy player. And so like, how is he going to adjust? And then you watch him in that first game back and it's, oh, well, he's getting to catch and attack on the move, go one-on-one. I think he had like 8 or 9 runners or floaters last night. Like he's able to get to pet shots for himself because the threat of him shooting is so sort of worrying that the defense is going to overreact to him or they got to press up on him. And as soon as you're pressing up on him, he can beat one guy off the bounce and get into the, into the paint. So I think it's notable that after the game, Hero did say, like, I think we're going to wind up getting to more pick and roll. I think there's some people that are like, concerned about that. But I think it's also like his skill set as somebody who can move the ball, who can shoot, who's an excellent movement shooter. That was kind of how he came in to the NBA, being a little bit more of an off ball player. Like, he should be able to really sing in this system. It also made me laugh because when people were starting to pitch Ja Morant potential trade destinations, Miami came up a bunch, and I was like, I don't think he likes the way that they play. If I remember right, like they were just doing this, and it wasn't really the guy who was responsible for that got fired, and now he's over in Miami. I don't know. That might not work out too well. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like Eric Spoelstra, it's one of the wildest true things in the NBA that Eric Spoelstra has not won Coach of the Year. He has been, you know, widely reputed and regarded as, if not the best, then one of the very best in-game tacticians, guy coaching his team over the course of a season, getting them, you know, developing them, figuring out which guys he can use, which alignments he can use, how to, you know, plug this hole or accentuate that strength. And this is, you know, arguably the most stark version of that we've seen. To be able to remain that focused, that competitive about implementing that sort of strategic change in the middle of an awful lot of individual personal upheaval, like that's got to be something that his players, you know, respect the hell out of. I think the league at large respects the hell out of it. And yeah, the steady set of hands that Eric Spoelstra has been for that franchise for that long, I think Heat fans are awfully thankful to have him at the controls.
Yeah, man. I don't know if he can get a jersey number up there next to Michael Jordan's in the rafters, which is very weird that Pat Riley has Michael Jordan's jersey retired in the Miami Heat arena. But Yeah, maybe they can get a jersey or just like a silhouette of like him doing his power pose on the sideline, hands on the hips. The classic Eric Spoelstra pose. I think it's just for a guy who is leading a team, bottom 10 offense in the last 3 years, and just decides, you know what, let's just do something crazy because there it is. The Spo pose. Jerry Madelon, who used to be like a TV coach over at ESPN, he talked about your presence on air and like how you can like convey confidence and power. And he one time was like, hey, you cover the Miami Heat, right? And GMAT was like, you cover the Heat, right? He's like, yeah. He's like, watch Eric Spoelstra on the sideline. He does this power pose and he's talking to LeBron. He's talking to D Wade and they're locked in because he's conveying power. He's the way his body language is like, listen to me, and they're buying in. Do that on air. Do your power pose, Tom. And I was like, wow, GMAT. Shouts to GMAT, by the way. He's just a great guy to have in your life, giving you kind of coaching and pumping you up. I always think about that is just, he didn't play in the league. He was a video coordinator. And now he's regarded as America's best coach right now to lead Team USA. Never won coach of the year. And here he is. The Miami Heat are 12-6. And how's the Jimmy Butler thing going on in Golden State right now? It's 10-9 for the Warriors. And a lot of it is because he's willing to change. He's willing to adapt. Eric Spoelstra is what I think every coach in basketball, every coach should always try to evolve and adapt and change for the better and be open to that. And that curiosity, I think, is what drives Eric Spoelstra. So shouts to him and what they're doing in Miami. Dan, what's your next little number here?
Yeah, we're going to keep it in Florida. Next little number is 0.643, so 643. That is the Orlando Magic's winning percentage this season when Jalen Suggs suits up. I am a pretty simple man. I'm thankful for vibe-shifting menaces, guys who really set a tone when they play on-ball defense, when they bring that power pose, that kind of energy to a team, to the way that they comport themselves. Jalen Suggs plays like, you know, so you hear that old canard. He plays like a football player. He was one in high school. He was a really good one. He plays like, you know, he is physical to a fault, like a defensive back, but also like the quarterback that's in charge of everything when he's out there. He was on a minutes restriction to start the season after having a long recovery from left knee surgery. After the 144-103 blowout of the Sixers in NBA Cup play on Tuesday, the Magic are now 9-5 in the 14 games that Suggs has played. They went 2-3 without him. Since he got cleared for a heavier workload, his minutes restrictions got lifted. He's about 16 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists per game on 48% shooting. Orlando's won 5 of the last 6 since he got his minutes ticked up. His per game numbers actually went down in that Sixers game because he got ejected early in the second quarter for being the third man into a fight between Andre Drummond and Wendell Carter Jr., which actually seemed like it was going to be fine. Andre Drummond and Wendell Carter Jr. were just kind of yapping at each other after grabbing some jerseys. And then in from off screen, after Andre Drummond squares up, in from off screen comes our guy. Here he is, the defensive back on his way in to make the hit. Jalen Suggs comes in, just boom, shoves.
Yep.
That was a little my John Madden for the turducken on Thanksgiving. He comes in and he does the two-hand shove, just gets the 6'11", 280-pound Drummond, moves him out of the way, just saying, hey, get out of my guy's face. What are you doing? You're pushing and shoving. You're starting something. We're waxing you. We're on the way to like an 84-point first half. This game is over before it even started. You're trying to get some energy going. I will not abide by it. And then in the resulting fracas, technical fouls all over the place. Suggs gets 2 for instigating and for moving the things along. He is like pumping his fist afterward. Like, I think maybe he was ready to go on Thanksgiving break. I don't know. But he gets run. He gets the gate. He's yapping at the Sixers fans as he goes out. The energy, the vibe that he brings to that Magic team, I think it is notable that when he started, they kind of like were able to take the governor off of him and let him go a little bit more full steam, full speed. That's when things started to make more sense for the Magic, even with Paolo Banchero out of the lineup. Like, their defense has ticked up. Their offense is starting to cohere better with him really kind of infusing the pace, the physicality, the recklessness with which he plays on the offensive and defensive end of the floor, particularly on the defensive end of the floor. His shot making is coming along, all those sorts of things. He's just a real energizer for that team. He's the spirit of that team. And I think he might not be the best player on that team, but I think he's the guy that puts the battery in everybody's back. And I'm a sucker for guys like that. I love those sorts of players that like become the spirit of a team. Jalen Suggs is that kind of guy, and I think the Magic are awfully thankful to have him.
You know what, Dan? You know what I'm thankful for is our producers for showing us that clip there. Can we pull it up one more time, Emmy? If we can show that clip of Jalen Suggs coming in. I want you to focus on the referee here who jumps in. His name is Jason Goble. That is my doppelganger. I have been mistaken at an NBA game for a Jason Goble. Do you see him right there? The ball. I have been in Charlotte and someone came up to me. He's like, "Hey, you're an NBA referee, right?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Oh, I thought, oh, you're not, are you sure?" And I was like, "Yeah, this is pre-beard.
I was going to say, did this precipitate the growing of the beard? Was this like, I got to make sure I differentiate myself?
Yeah, I can't be associated with the Goebbels, I can't. So John Goble, Jason Goble, NBA referees. I am not the third Goble, but it does sound.
Are you more of a doppel Goble or a Goble ganger in that situation? I'm not sure which one.
I you know what? I want to give another shout out here for the producers for showing this, because now we're going to go gobble, 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 gobble as our, like, the episode title.
Oh, my God. It came from Mr. Buck Buck NBA. So, yeah, gobble, gobble, buck, buck. We've all got avian Mr. flu. Buck, we're all doing great.
Well,
I'm thankful for Jalen Suggs, and I'm thankful that you brought us into your Goble world there. Thank you so much for that.
Gobble, gobble. You're welcome. Where am I going to? I'm going to go from another place in Charlotte here. There's this place just down the street from me. It's called Cajun Queen, and it's a great New Orleans restaurant here. And that's kind of like the nickname for Derek Queen is the Cajun Queen, but I'm workshopping this. I'm very thankful for Derek Queen in my life. He has been so much fun on the floor and off the floor. His tweets have been outstanding, really fun. Why be less when you can be more? Guy from Baltimore. He's got the full package you want. He's got this Alperen Şengün, Nikola Jokic game. And, you know, statistically, as a rookie, his per 100 possession numbers or per possession numbers are right there with like Chris Webber, Alperen Şengün, and Nikola Jokic, their rookie seasons. He's got great touch around the basket. He loves dunking on dudes in the open court. He's great at drawing contact. He's just got a lot of crafty, bruising game to him that I really appreciate. And what he did to Jokic and going right at him against his first matchup against Big Joker was awesome. I'm locked in on the Derek Queen experience and what he's been tweeting at the Atlanta Falcons, like circling his calendar, because the Atlanta fans have been just grilling this guy because of the trade. And, you know, the Atlanta Hawks traded Derek Queen, or the rights to Derek Queen, to get that future 2026 first round pick from the New Orleans Pelicans. And so he better deliver in order to make Pelicans fans forget about the trade that Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver did. And guess what? He's been awesome. I love watching him play. One of my favorite rookies to watch, one of my favorite players to watch in the league. And so, Dan, if you'll indulge me, I want to come up with some nicknames for Derek Queen. Not that listen to us here, but I wrote some down and I want your beautiful mind here to help me out. I mentioned that he's kind of like a Jokic, Şengün, you know, prodigy. He's got a lot of great assists, finishing, touch, all of that. Big man, bruising guy. So what about Jambalaya Joker? How do we feel about that? Okay.
I like the, I mean, alliteration always going to go over well with me. Jambalaya Joker. I wonder if Jambalaya is a little too much of a mouthful of Jambalaya there. But I do like where your head's at. I like the spirit of it.
Okay. You know, there's the Sambor shuffle, you know, Jokic's move. Sambor, he's from Sambor, Serbia. What about Sambor Shuffaletta? Yep. It's so bad it's good, right? Like the Sambor Shuffaletta, in honor of the Muffaletta. Shouts to one of the best sandwiches on earth there in New Orleans. So I came up with Jambalaya Joker, the Sambor Shuffaletta. I also Sangui sausage.
Some be more shuffle.
Some be more shuffleetta.
Then that now the syllables are really getting to be a jambalaya mouthful there. I'm sorry. You know what? I stepped over your third. Let me hear the third one.
Sangui sausage. So like instead of Shangoon, you're going Andouille sausage. So Sangui sausage is what I'm going with that one. That's my third one. What about instead of Alperin Shangoon, we go with Albanier Shangoon? Does that
I
work?
I love that.
Okay, Albanier Shangoon.
Yeah, it's clean. Very, very clean.
Or just the Cajun Queen. That could work as well. So that's five nicknames I have for Derek Queen. Dan, I don't know how much Derek Queen you've been catching. It's been a bleak season there in New Orleans. Zion in and out of the lineup. But Derek Queen's awesome, man. I love watching this dude. Everything about him, his personality, just this big dude who has just so much skill and craft. And he loves giving out as much as he takes in. So I just kind of feel like we need a national appreciation for Derek Queen.
Absolutely. And I mean, like when a trade like that happens and a transaction goes through and it's so overwhelmingly like pilloried, right? And just like in like roundly dismissed and insulted by everybody. I think we forget a little bit, like there's a person that's going to have to sort of walk into that shade and then like try to walk out of that shadow, right? And like Derek Queen, all he's done is like, I mean, he can't control any of the other stuff. All he can control is like, I need to like just play my game and try to make it look like it was a smart move. Make it look like, yeah, no, there's a reason you go up and get me. It's because I'm that dude. I'm this good. And then you look at in the early going, as again, obviously we're talking about the first, 5 weeks of somebody's career or less than that, because he missed the first few games with injury. The per minute numbers in terms of scoring, rebounding, and assists, like the people who have done it that young, it's like Jokic, Doncic, Alvin Adams, Shangoon, and Giddy. Like there's only a handful of guys, all of whom have put up monster numbers. Some of whom have been like multiple time all-star, like this is the movement of like, this guy sees the game and processes the floor and can like be a step ahead in terms of the passes he throws, the ways he can get guys open, like breaking the tendencies of a defense. And you can run your offense through him as a hub. And my concern initially was like, well, how do you have, if it's like, this is a great big guy who we have some concerns about how well he'll hold up defensively, and he plays best with the ball in his hands in the middle of the floor. I was like, well, you have Zion Williamson. So how does that fit together? And I mean, one answer to that is, well, you'll never have both of them on the floor at the same time because everybody's injured in, New Orleans. So that's maybe not a worry, but they've played 85 minutes together so far. They're plus 19 with the two of them on the floor together. And like the defense has been better with Queen on the floor than off it. Not necessarily saying a ton considering how ramshackle everything is in New Orleans, but like there's a lot to like about what he already can do at the NBA level. And as you mentioned, the tone of it, the feeling of like he walked in and they asked him like, how does it feel to like, you're seeing that you're able to get production right away. And he's like, yeah, it's kind of easier. The players are good, but also the floor is more spaced out. And all I got to do is like go beat that guy. And then I'm at the rim. Like he really has a sense of, I know I can already do this. And to be able to go at, Jokic, the best player in the world like that. And, make Jokic respect what you're bringing to him over the course of that game. It was clear like, oh, I have to get up for this guy. That said a lot. And I think, whatever nickname you use for Derek Queen, I think we're going to be talking about him quite a bit.
Jambalaya Joker. I like that one. We can go with a lot. We'll still, if you want to comment at the YouTube comment section, have at it. If you got better ones, I'd love to hear it. Because we got a lot to work with, from the last name with Queen. He's from Baltimore, Maryland Terrapin, and just his game is so fun. It's just great. I love it. So what else you got for me, Dan? What else should we be thankful for?
Yeah, I'll try to go through this one quick because we've been yapping. But my third little number this week is 104.1. That's how many points per 100 possessions the Raptors are scoring in the half court this season, according to Cleaning the Glass. And if that sounds like a lot, it's because it is. 104.1 is the second most efficient half court offense in the league. The number one half court offense belongs to the Denver Nuggets, who have Nikola Jokic, and the Raptors don't. The Raptors don't have anybody that's on that level as terms of like the offensive engine, all world creator, facilitator. And yet that's, they're up there. They're scoring so efficiently in the half court. They're 10th in the NBA in field goal attempts in the restricted area per game. They're third in their mid-range shooting efficiency. Like, they've got a bunch of guys that can knock down shots in those in-between areas, and they're not turning the ball over. That's really like their efficiency really has taken a jump because they're not coughing the ball up. So you're getting shots on goal, and you've got with Brandon Ingram, with RJ Barrett, with Scotty Barnes, with Emmanuel Quickly, and Jakob Poeltl finishing on the interior, you know, off the screen and roll and on putbacks and stuff. You've got guys that are all like pretty good to very good offensive players. And I'll hand up accountability. I was like, I don't see how this all fits. I don't necessarily know how all of these guys who are pretty good and feel a little bit more like a fantasy basketball team, like how are they going to coalesce and congeal as a roster? Like, this guy needs to be in the mid-range. That guy needs to be at the elbow. Is anybody shooting enough threes? That guy's better as a cutter on the ball. You know, like, how do we make this all work? And so far, really, really great. Like, the Raptors have been one of the biggest surprises in the NBA this season. And that's what I'm thankful for here is, like, it's not that I was, you know, it's the ability to be surprised, right? To think that you can, like, diagnose it and analyze it and say, based on these players and what I know about them and what I know, I think I understand about the system they want to run and how they want to put it all together, I am going to spit out this outcome. And guess what? That's not the way basketball works. You know, like the possibility to be surprised, to be wrong, and like delighted by being wrong. Because if like I went in thinking they're not going to be all that fun to watch, it'll be kind of a slog. It's going to be all these mid-range shots and like a bunch of bricks and whatever. And then it looks so much better than I thought. And then all of a sudden, I get something fun to check out. So, like, that is something that I am grateful for, the possibility of surprise and, like, finding a different way to do things where it doesn't all have to look the same. The Raptors have found a way that works for them, like a lot of other teams are finding ways that work for them. And it's not all just cookie-cutter offense, which is kind of great.
Yeah, I kind of thought that they might be the Sacramento Kings of the East, where it's just like, how are all these pieces going to fit? And, Brandon Ingram joins this club that already has like go-to scorers, and how are they going to share the ball? It just seemed like a mismatch of players and offensive talent. And shouts to Darko Rajakovic, who's been able to engineer this defense, this full court defense, the pressure defense that we saw from Portland and Indiana last year. Toronto was right up there as it's the most full court pressing team in the league and has been doing that in a big way this year. Kirk Goldsberry wrote about it this week over at The Ringer. Is just their pickup, full court pickup distance is way higher than it usually is last year and across the league. So shouts to Coach Dark of what an amazing job he's done with this Toronto Raptors club. And I'm going to go with another team I just mentioned, the Portland Trailblazers. I'm going to go with Denny Avdija. I think Blazers fans already appreciate this dude. But I just want the national audience to appreciate this dude. The Blazers are right now down 4 point guards, Dan. 4 point guards on the roster. Damian Lillard, of course, we knew wasn't going to be out there this season. We knew that. Didn't know about Scoot Henderson until he got injured with the torn hamstring in the offseason. And then they're down Blake Wesley. They're down Drew Holiday. They're also down Shaedon Sharpe and Matisse Thybulle. 6 backcourt players. All of them were expected to pick up some of the ball handling duties in case, you know, Damian Lillard wasn't going to be coming back this year. And they're all out. 6 ball handlers, 6 backcourt guys out for the Portland Trailblazers. And here's Denny Avdija being like, wait a minute, am I the best point guard on the roster right now? Like, this guy, he's 14th since Drew Holiday got injured. He's 14th in the NBA in assists per game at 7. But here's the key stat. He's 4th in the league in potential assists with 17.8 per game. Mm. That's crazy high. He is a guy who's been the engine for them all season long, but especially so when they got injured, the injuries started, you know, cascading on the team. And Denny Avdija, since Drew Holiday got hurt, 23 points per game, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He's one of 4 players to average that. That's Jokic, Luka, and Cade Cunningham. Normally, guys, when they're dishing out 18 potential assists, meaning, you know, according to NBA.com and the player tracking technology, if the guy, the recipient of those passes, hit the shot, he would end up with 18 assists per game. But he's only had 7. That's about 39% assist rate on that potential assist. Usually, it's like 55%, 60%. So what I'm trying to get at is that Denny Avdija, in a normal offense, where he might be passing to Damian Lillard, he could be averaging 10 assists a game based on those numbers. Is that if you're getting 55 to 60? Yeah.
No, which is unbelievable, like considering this was somebody that the Wizards were like, I don't know, we got him on this contract. We see an opportunity to put him for a couple contract. Of firsts. Yeah, and like he has turned into this kind of offensive engine is really incredible.
Yeah, he's been awesome, and I'm thankful because I, as you know, on the show is like, man, all these injuries. What are we going to talk about for 48 minutes? And he's been basically 40 of those 48 minutes. It's like, wow, did you see that? We call him Turbo for a reason. He's so fast in transition. He finishes through everybody. He's a mix of like Giannis and Luka, and like he's just, if you look at his and one numbers, his free throw numbers, his assist numbers, he's one of the very best in the game at what he does. And I think he should be in the All-Star. He's on that list right now, especially with the new rules of those top eight international players in that team world team. I think Denny Avdija is right in there. So Jamal Murray, Denny Avdija, Lauri Markkanen, they're going to be in that mix. And Denny has been awesome. So I'm thankful for Denny. And I think the rest of the NBA world should be thankful for him because he's been a real breakout star this season and really fun to watch. So that's my guy, my third one there, Dan.
I love that. One more little number on Denny Avdija. Since 2020, every year, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has been the league's leader in drives per game. As of today, the league leader in drives per game is Denny Avdija. He is the first person in the last like 5 years to really mount a challenge for the top of that throne, which is pretty incredible. Especially as you said, the Blazers really need it. They need that North-South creation. They need that that engine, and he's been that and then some.
Yeah. Shouts to Turbo. We got more to talk about. You mentioned Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. I think we got to spend some extra time here on the Thunder here. So they are 17-1. We're going to go deep dive on the Thunder here coming up. All right, Dan, we're giving lots of thanks this week on this special edition of The Big Number. At the top, just Lakers fans, gratitude for Luka legend, Halle Luka, all of those things falling into their lap last year with the trade. But I think we got to spend some time on the 17-1 Oklahoma City Thunder squad that is doing this without Jalen Williams. I know they're not Lakers, Warriors, Knicks, and they're flying a little under the radar somehow at 17-1. But Dan, I feel like the way they play basketball, the selfless team defense, the Dobermans that we talked about at the beginning of last season are very much there, and even growing it from puppies into full-blown, like, terrifying Dobermans that are just going to viciously attack you defensively and offensively. Dan, what is left to say about this Oklahoma City Thunder team that is still shorthanded and doing this to teams on a routine basis?
I think what's left to say is let's not overlook the fact that we are watching history in real time, right? Like, they are on a 77-win pace. And that's, I think, we can safely say they're probably going to lose more than five games over the course of the season. 77 is an awfully lofty pace. Nobody wins 95% of their games. However, what we see from that, and yeah, you know, throw your caveats out there about their strength of schedule, and they've played a lot of teams that haven't been exactly, you know, world-class competition and yada, yada, yada. They are responding to that by laying the smackdown in like a historically incredible way. Their best guys are all better. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander won MVP last season, won finals MVP last season. He's better this year. Like, his shooting efficiency is up. The assist rate is up. The turnover rate, which is already microscopic, is down while continuing to play excellent defense on ball and in their scheme. He doesn't even have to play in the fourth quarter most of the time. He's nearing that, like, the Embiid from a couple seasons ago before he got hurt, where it was like a point a minute. SGA is nearing that kind of category. Their bigs are better. Chet Holmgren, the shooting efficiency is up. Isaiah Hartenstein, I think, is shooting like 70% on two-pointers. They're both protecting the rim at an elite level, you know, rebounding the ball. They just go into the grab bag and are like, okay, A.J. Mitchell. Might call him yet another Jay Williams. Why not? A.J. Mitchell, like, you were a second-round pick last year. You barely played for us, and now you are one of the most improved players in the league, like six-man candidate, in part because you're also like another absolute point of attack dog on defense who can then drive to the basket, get to the rim. Like, the gap, that defense is better. That defense was the best defense, or one of the best defenses we'd ever seen, and the defense is better. It sounds ridiculous, so I'm going to read it out because I want to make sure I'm getting it right. According to Cleaning the Glass, their numbers strip out garbage time data. The Thunder are allowing 103.1 points per 100 possessions outside of garbage time. That is 7.4 points per 100 fewer than number two, Detroit. So the gap between first and second, 7.4 points per 100, is the same as the gap between number two, Detroit, and number 20, Milwaukee. They are nearly a league ahead of number two in defensive efficiency this season. And it's not just a this season thing. We've talked before about our friend Jared Dubin at his website, Last Night in Basketball. He has a metric that he calls adjusted efficiency. And it's a way to say, basically see how much better or worse than league average are you in a given season. So like the league average team this season, the Thunder have been 14.4 points per 100 possessions better than an imagined league average team this season. That's not just obviously number one in the league this season. That would be the biggest gap, that 14.4 points per 100 better than league average, since the ABA-NBA merger in 1976, bigger than the 95 Bulls, bigger than the 2000 Lakers, bigger than any elite team that you can think of, including last year's Thunder. And they haven't had Jalen Williams for a possession. So we are watching
all NBA defensive or all defensive team member Jalen Williams. Yeah,
all defensive team member, all NBA forward. You know, the guy that put up 40 in the finals, like their number two ball handler, a guy that's their number two scorer. They haven't had the second best player on their team all season, and they are on pace for 77 wins. And yeah, like I said, you can poke holes in the resume of it. Fair enough. And you can say that pace is obviously unsustainable and it will come back to earth totally. Either way, what we are watching has been historic dominance. And I feel like just because it's rarely flashy, we can kind of let it just thrum along in the background. I'm grateful for the fact that every time I turn on that team and tune into one of their games, I'm kind of aware that I'm getting to see something awfully special.
Yep. Well said, Dan. Last week, we talked about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being the MVP in my book because of his mind-boggling numbers and his clutch performance, where he was leading the NBA in clutch points despite only playing six clutch games and being on the bench for like 15 fourth quarters. Just checking in here, Dan, still leading the NBA in clutch points, and he hasn't had a clutch game since last week. So he is that far ahead of everybody else that he's just like chilling in fourth quarters and still leading the league in a category that everyone else is like gasping for air trying to catch up to Shai, and he's still leading the league. 56 points. Tyrese Maxey, in over twice as many clutch games, is still trailing him with 51 points. So Dan, it's just remarkable what they're doing. I think they beat the Golden State record. I think they do it because the team, they're not reliant on one guy to do everything. This is a team culture, team-wide playing style. And as good as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is offensively, defensively, I think the old adage is that defense always travels. It always travels, and you don't have to worry about make or miss league when it comes to your defense, because they are just that ferocious and they're going to turn you over so much. It doesn't matter who is out there offensively, especially when you got AJ Mitchell and Isaiah Joe and Chet Holmgren, and it just feels like they're going to be able to score 25 a night because so much of their offense is in transition off of getting interceptions and stealing the ball and going the other way. When you have a defense that good at turning you over and smothering you and going the other way, I mean, instead of 30-point blowouts, if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, knock on wood, had to miss some time, I still think that they would be beating the doors off of people. So, granted, it's early, 17-1, and the Blazers can you can thank the Blazers for giving them their only loss, because otherwise it'd be 18-0 and be wall-to-wall coverage about how far they can take this. But yeah, I think they do it, Dan. I think they do win over 72 games this year, because their culture, their team development, all of this, it just seems so plug and play that whoever's out there, that defense is going to travel. And I just feel like that is the reason why they're as good as they are, is like you said, so much better than everybody else. They're playing a different game. It always feels like they got six players on the floor at all times. And yeah, wait till Jalen Williams comes back, everybody. Wait, just wait. So, Dan, we got to wrap up here. I think we're both very thankful for having the Yahoo Sports production team and everybody around us
Absolutely.
Making this show a reality. Thank you on this Thanksgiving week for stepping up, Ryan and Emmy. Appreciate y'all. Thanks to everybody for listening, watching on YouTube. Go subscribe to us on YouTube if you haven't already, and give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Just one more thing before I go. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Molly wanted to contribute to the show today with her little hat for Thanksgiving, her little turkey hat. I think I'm on here.
Aww.
I think, yeah. She has mom, dog, cat, and I am not on here, Dan. This is Molly. Come on. I gotta give her some extra love in this week so I can get on the next Thanksgiving hat. Dan, any shout out this Thanksgiving holiday? What do you want to give a shout out before we go?
Well, first thing, I think you should just be like, oh yeah, no, she calls me dog. That's my her loving nickname for me. That's how I know I show up.
We don't even have a cat.
Well, she's thankful for cats. Thankful for like the concept of them, their existence in the world. Sure, you know what? You've guilted me into it. I'll shout out my children as well. They're not going to listen to this. Siobhan, Olivia. Olivia's not feeling great, so she might not be traveling for Thanksgiving. So send your well wishes over Divine Family Way. And I don't have any art on my head right now, but maybe I can make that happen after the show. We'll see about that.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. Very grateful for you as my co-pilot here on this numerical journey we do every week. And have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Have as much turkey as your stomach allows. I'm going to be stuffing myself up with stuffing as I do once a year. Is stuffing more seasonal or is pumpkin pie more seasonal? We could go a whole nother hour on this. If stuffing was so good, then why wouldn't you have it all the time? Same thing with pumpkin pie. If it was so good, why wouldn't you have it all the time?
Yeah, I should have stuffing more often. That's a really good point.
Hmm. So, Dan, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving week. And I hope you get a lot of stuffing this week
Yep.
and leftovers.
Thank you so much. Travel safe, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving.